Anybody out there want to hear about CLR? Today was a good day for it. Patrick Dassault was once the engineer at TI that made the TI machine work finally. And he came to Lucid and made Cadillac work. If any of you remember, Energize, the product. So here's a guy who's a wizard in my respect of CLOS and Cadillac and just about everything else. So let's see what he's got to tell us, where this is going next.
Years of my life as the chief architect for the common language runtime at Microsoft, starting from very humble beginnings to finally shipping version 1, now working on shipping version 2. This has been a very marginal part of my life ever since I left at FBI. When I attended this meeting. And I've been looking for excuses to go back and work on this. And I think now there is a glimmer of hope, in my opinion. And so first, why do I want to use this? To me, there is the first and foremost is the fact that you can manipulate code as data. And you can get the parse tree is obvious, you can modify it, and you can spit out code, and that code will run with the same efficiency as the original code you started from. Really great. I'm still amazed by the kind of the cleanliness and the power of the Common Lisp runtime library. There are not too many functions. They work, they are at the right level. In a way, Visual Basic isn't that far off. I mean, they kind of, vaguely look the same semantic level. It's still very useful. And, you can build a real app with that runtime library, pretty easily. And the third is the interactive, the listener window. So, you interact with the language. In real time instead of having to compile. So those are the attributes of Lisp that I love the most, and I kind of looking forward every time there is a language out there. I say, how does it really work to you? Obviously, there are other attributes, and I'm going to enumerate some of them, the ones that I believe are significant, at least for me, one way or another. It's weakly typed. And at the time, my work on this machine was great. We didn't type anything, and the system was pretty efficient. It would dispatch on the right arithmetic data type. It was quick. I think it's also a curse because you lack compile time verification. So in theory, you have to test the entire system the way it's going to be deployed in order to make sure that you don't get a type error in the middle of running the program, which is really atrocious if you are talking about high reliability programs. There is a very rich object-oriented runtime with CLOS and the MetaObject protocol are, in my opinion, unsurpassed in terms of object orientation. Again, code is data. Reflection, and reflection is slightly different from code is data. Reflection is working up to an object, whatever it is, and untype and say, what the hell are you? And if it's code, you can find out about where it's coming from, what method of which generic function it's at, specializer, stuff like that. Dynamic evaluation is also a big part of Lisp as we know it. beta programming, especially for CDOS. Most Linux systems have a very rich ID with data and control inspectors. And again, rich libraries, we have framework, we have Clean, we have CDOS, we have most of the EDC runtime. But other languages have been squeezing Lisp from various parts. So Lisp is weakly typed, and people like the fact that they untype. But then, all of the scripting languages are like that too. We get Python, which I have great respect for, Ruby, which I like a lot, JavaScript, PHP, which I don't like, but whatever. But they are, untyped scripting languages, and people use them successfully. And we have a lot of cycles available on machines now, and you can do real apps that look like normal apps, and you look and it's a Ruby app. Then we have the strongly typed dynamic languages, which are strongly typed, but for a lot of good characteristics of Lisp, such as automatic memory management, collection, code generation, and those are C#, and the family that runs on the CLR, and its main competitor, Java. But also, the code is data is also threatened by XML, because XML in a lot of ways is actually used as just semantic representation, and people use semantic representation as data, which is roughly the equivalent of coded as data. So there are various arrows pointed at Lisp, and the question is, what can we do about it? And Lisp is unique because Lisp has all of the good attributes that we like. And in the past, I made very few performance compromises. So we use good tagging systems, and even if you are untyped, we still get fairly good arithmetic performance and. So we can build real applications. We can have successful Lisp systems built on that, and they can somehow compete with other languages. But in my opinion, that's the strength part. But it's also a terrible weakness, because almost every Lisp system is a self-sufficient environment on its own, and you have to make a religion choice. Either you use it, and then you are going to reach out and, foreign function calls on some stuff, because, you need, the rubber needs to meet the road at some point. You need to interface with, crazy stuff like, COM or Windows system, whatever. But since Lisp is self-sufficient, and it's good enough, a lot of stuff, then manufacturers of Lisp systems tend to be fairly closed. And it's true, Lisp doesn't really interact very well with native languages. And the main weakness is what I call interoperability, which is more than foreign functions. So native languages are truly second class. You need to use a funny syntax to import their header files if you can. You need to declare foreign functions. Generally, you lose representation. It's very hard to go natively on a fully 32-bit integer and stay as a native word integer in Lisp, because usually you need tags, and so those tags, you say no, integer are 30 bits and not good enough, but that's fully not necessarily good enough when you have an interop at a fairly deep level. Calling from native to Lisp is generally a lot worse than calling from Lisp to native, and that shows. I mean, if you know you hand someone a DLL, and that DLL actually come, you know, as being is a list module, it's kind of hell to integrate. It never integrates with popular frameworks that are available on the native side. And by framework, I mean object-oriented frameworks, such as you know, the Java or the CLR frameworks or various unmanaged ones that Microsoft or other people have been out. And last, which is a big problem that I wasn't aware as much as I am now, is usually on normal platforms, people tend to supply tools which are really expected to be used across the board to build an app. So you have, when you have a debugger, well, you know, you are expected to debug all of your modules using the machine debugger. And you can go up to, you know, Microsoft and pick up the WinDBG, which is, you know, a free debugger, and you can debug any language with it. Except when you step into a disk runtime, you know, things start to get ugly. You know, we have linkers in the managed world, and linker hence, you know, can't link you know, weird modules. And so, in a way, all of that stuff conspires against making Lisp a logical language choice, but make it instead a philosophy and a religion choice. So when you start a project, you can say, okay, that project will be written in Lisp, and then you have to, you know, sell it to your management. When you pick, and by contrast, if you pick up C Sharp or VB.NET, yeah, people in shops do it interchangeably. I mean, one room will use C Sharp, the other one will use VB.NET, and nobody has to know the difference because they completely interop with each other. The debugger will work the same way, various debuggers will work the same way. So I think there is an opportunity for someone, somewhere, to try to produce a list for those new platforms. And the new platforms that are, you know, significant nowadays are Java and .NET. And what's new about them is the fact that they have a substrate that is fairly fairly advanced, and, you know, they have automatic memory management, they have an operating system, and they do support multiple languages. I mean, .NET was designed from the ground up in its interaction set to support many languages. Java can support them as well. And as a proof, Java has been supporting scripting languages quite well for some time. And .NET, I think last count, we had 27 languages running on it. A lot of them experimental. But we have, you know, commercial ones like COBOL. I mean, Hitachi COBOL is something that they use on the iPhone runs quite successfully, and then we have good scripting languages such as Iron Python that runs with pretty acceptable performance. So what I'm kind of dreaming about is Lisp implemented as a native language on top of either Java or the .NET CLR. And by native is what I mean. I mean the native primitive formats are the same, are the one of the platform. So when you're talking about an int, it is the int defined by Java or defined by the CLR. Same for float, same for the object. Use as the code, instead of reading weird modules that are, you know, Fazzle file or whatever, use just the normal assembly, whatever it's called in, you know, class files for Java or assemblies for CLR. And so someone can pick it up and, you know, crack it open using the normal tool, disassemble it, and it looks like, you know, a normal assembly. And last is try to provide a good integration with the dominant ID toolset, which is on Microsoft, it's the Visual Studio and Eclipse for Java, as far as I know. So the main advantage is that you can make fine-grained language choices at the component level. So you can have a small DLL and say, yep, that small DLL, I'll give it to you, but you know it's written in this. And I think the other advantage is you don't have to win all of the battles. When Lisp is a self-sufficient and independent environment, well, if somebody has an FFT module to run, you better be able to actually be able to be competitive when it's coding in Lisp. And is that an interesting battle to win? I've been there, and I don't think it's that interesting to win. I think it's not what you would like to code in Lisp, because you get no leverage from it. I mean, you know, you look at a piece of FFT or even in C or even in Lisp, and they look the same. They have the same number of lines and the same number of abstraction. However, when we are talking about going down to a semantic, importing an XML structure and groveling over it, if somehow you can transfer it to a Lisp structure, it's a lot more convenient. It's better tools, nicer. So that's the battle that we need to win. And for that, we don't need to be competitive on your level. So what's the cost? So what I am talking about implies that you can't use tricks such as using tabs. So obviously weekly typing is slower, no question about it, because you need to do runtime tab checking as opposed and using fairly slow methods. For example, if you're on type, then it really means that you type object and you need to box your integers, either by explicit boxing like Java or by implicit boxing like the CLR. You also lose a lot in terms of object-oriented concepts. That is a shame, but on the other hand, I think there is a market and there is an appeal for such a system. So, by thinking about for a few hours, it is kind of my opinion of if I had the time to do it, if I wanted to do it, here's what I would do. Actually, would go even as far as removing the category tags and say, okay, well, common list knows how to do clear stuff, let's use that and have only, my list would have only explicit declarations. I would use a subset of CLR, so I would take the object model from either Java or Lisp or CLR and translate it into a subset of CLOS and keep that only. I would keep the MetaObject protocol because it's supported by reflection. Reflection can translate into those. You can also code closures. Some are more efficient than others, but I think you can keep closure. I would keep them. I would, as an implementation trick, I would keep all of the code app data and generate dynamic code generation to preserve good performance. And I would try to salvage the parts of the common Lisp runtime that do make sense and say, well, not everything is the same. For example, on CLR and I think on Java too, Java as well. Strings are not mutable, so it can be n version of the string library obviously won't work. And I would integrate it with the native IDE. It doesn't mean I wouldn't provide a nicer ID, but at least I would provide an integration with a native one, so people wouldn't be surprised when they debug, they would get their source, their source info and stuff like that integrated into the ID that they happen to be running. So, in conclusion, I think that Lisp isn't cooked yet, and Lisp can fulfill a role that is not filled yet. However, I believe that the gap is closing, and I've seen in our research lab, people are starting to write macros, these macros for C#, because it's a big gap. People are treating, especially with XML, code as data, and the gap will be filled, and it won't be as nice as Lisp, but it will serve the same purpose. And at the end, if you look 10 years down the road, Lisp doesn't get out there, and you say, okay, why do I use Lisp now? So that's what I wanted to say, and I hope that somebody could listen at some point and try something. And by the way, I'm really pleased to see all of the efforts of porting languages on top of either the CLR or Java. What I'm talking about is slightly different. Is actually changing the language so it is completely the same, as opposed to porting the language and make it run on top of the CLR, which is a very interesting but doesn't remove the the religious aspect of picking a language. Thank you.
Can CLR support union types? In particular, can it support type T?
It can support union types on value types. But on value types, which are unboxed stuff, so it might not be what you need. But we have a notion of types that are unboxed and you can union them and you can union them.
What if you wanted to read a Lisp token from the user? And it could be an arbitrary legal formless token. What type would you make the variable that you would put that into?
Object. I would type everything as object in the same type.
So if you were, for instance, reading a traditional parse, the parse tree, everything would end up as an object unless you did arbitrary consensus.
Yeah.
If someone were to agree with you, basically, and they wanted to implement such a product, a language, or whatever. How would they go about getting support from a big company like Microsoft, which would make all the difference in potentially making it successful?
Well, there are various ways, and I'm not an authority on that part. I'm not part of the marketing, but we've been working with some research universities. So we've been giving out grants for projects. So we ask for project submissions and we fund them as we see them fitting a pattern of the portfolio, research portfolio that we would like to see. So that's one way. And we also have a pretty nice, in my opinion, we have lots of groups in the CLR, and we answer the questions, and I monitor some of them. And
they also necessarily speaking from the money.
Making
sure it really does.
Right. So I believe our community is pretty, developer community right now is pretty thriving and friendly toward third party people. Yeah, we answer questions.
Suppose hypothetically you could talk to a Microsoft CLR architect. Mm-hmm. What would you tell them that you want it in the CLR that Lisp has. In other words, ask the question the other way.
Right. So we've been trying to actually introduce tags for a long time because we have free tags, it turns out. It turns out that the runtime knows about it to avoid them. So we can code, supposedly we could use the, if the two upper bits are set simultaneously, then a large part of the runtime will consider those as non-pointers. For a pointer field. And we've been trying to actually integrate that, and that's something that comes up every year. That's a huge effort because we have to reflect it officially in the type system. That means that we haven't really found a good solution besides forking the entire type system again. Right now, we have the CA, we essentially have a dual type system. We have the value type and reference types. And they are kind of dual. If we introduce tag types, we make another dual. And so we've been kind of afraid of it. However, we have been thinking about supporting not that officially. And those are the things that we care about. We also care about dynamic code generation. For scripting, and right now you can generate code at runtime, but you can't garbage collect it. And so there is a workaround, which is we support what we call abdomens, which are units of loads and unloads, and you can create an abdomen, documents of stuff in it, to generate code, and then when you unload it, then everything goes away, and everything is reclaimed. But we will probably very soon garbage collect the subset of the runtime generated code. What else? I mean, we are interested in essentially supporting modern languages. It always comes down to at the end is what's the demand, what's the effort. But those are the things that we actually usually get very few asks for. I mean, we go to a conference or we talk to a Python guy and say, oh, I would like this. Say, fine, and then we don't hear it from anyone else. We say, yeah, we like it, but it's not going to happen unless there's kind of more of a groundswell. But we have been working towards, the CLR and, Java have a major competitor, which is native code. So we've been working a lot, and all of what I'm saying there is actually a recursive, because if you talk to a native guy, he's going to tell me, oh, but the CLR needs to use standard assemblies, Windows, and the Windows organization at Microsoft has tons of tools that knows how to crack native DLLs, knows how to encode them for delta encoding, for patching, know how to do all kind of shit that actually doesn't really work very well when they find an IL assembly. And we've been, struggling to actually get to that level. And so we are working kind of two ways. First, we need to be better and as close to native as normal native code, and then second, also, we want to keep the edge on the dynamic aspect of our platform.
When you talk about runtime libraries, Lisp, I'm thinking of common Lisp, how much of it might be feasible. It does imply a much larger set of runtime libraries that are not already in existence. So even if they bottom out, like sequence functions, you've got keyword processing, you've got defaulted arguments, you've got a whole bunch of things before you ever get down to a bottom line. Mm-hmm. Bottom line might be in the CLR, but there's going to be a big load if you get a realistic that works on that.
Yeah, and so some of them, you give up on the you give up on some of the, I mean, I think personally, I think the keyword processing might be a little bit overboard in Kubernetes.
But then you don't have CommonWebs.
That's right, and I'm not advocating for CommonWebs. I'm not advocating for a Lisp that is integrated into the rest of the languages, that loses a bunch of features, but remain interesting for code as data and other type of processing.
So it's time for mainland China to surrender to Taiwan. Okay, Java is getting groovy, C became Python. I mean, Lisp is winning. It's just a matter of time. Why enough time for us to start like giving up on all the things we like? You don't read CLL. No one does.
That's right.
Well, you'll find out that we're picking up movies every day when it used to be every 3 months.
In other words, I think I have a hard time understanding who would use that list. And real list first would probably miss the features that you want to remove.
And, which is what? Like keyword processing?
And users of already existing languages in CLS platform. Why would they want to use this?
Right, so why would they want to use it? Because how do you parse? Have you ever parsed an XML DOM in the CLI? It's awful, right? I mean, it's really bad. Right, exactly. And so you get into a DOM, and the DOM is like, okay, the perfect representation of an XML DOM is Lisp, right? But we don't have that. That's one example where I miss it. Another example is
Ruby available? Flavor of Ruby available on the CLI?
There's somebody working on this. There's no complete implementation yet.
Why don't you get Strother to translate the whole CLR into a clickative columnist, and then you could just run the whole thing on a faster simulator?
Yep. Yes.
On your list of things to axe and things to keep, you axed out a good chunk of FOSS,
right?
But you kept the MOP. How does that work?
Well,
all of the flexibility of the MOP is like way beyond all the stuff you would presumably.
Not necessarily. Suppose you have only single inheritance. MOP would tell you how you can walk up to a class and add a method, right? Can find out, what the method arguments are, all that stuff, can add a subclass. That doesn't imply that the semantics of the underlying object-oriented system is
real. But that's not the MOP, that's just an inspector. When you want to do meta classes and more.
Yeah, it doesn't, MOP is still bound with the framework of the limitation of what CLOS does, right? So MOP will shrink in domain, but still remain valid.
I have a question. Let's go back and see what the original goals are for something that's not a play with this game. We need to have consistent data formats, basic data. We need to have modules that are similarly loadable. Interoperable function calls or similar function calls at least. Some more integrity on the runtime, or rather on the data. So if we stop just there and say, what does this imply?
Right.
Well,
yes.
This doesn't imply that you can't have runtime type checking.
That's right. Okay. That's right. And that my list was, it's my opinion. It's not, it's what I would do if I do it,
you'd like to elide as much as
right.
runtime type as you
right.
could, but some places, if it's there, it's not possible.
That's right, and I'm with you,
Now, let's look at one more step, though.
Uh-huh.
What's missing is the set of functionality that supports a decent compiler. That would be an adjunct of additional CLR routines that nobody would use in SAM.
Yes, right, yes.
Is that forbidden? Why would that be forbidden?
No. Like VB as addition as a runtime system that is, if you want to deploy a VB app,
then
you also add a DLL.
Why couldn't we get a list that supports most of the features of Common Lisp, including
keywords that some people may never use that you have to process to do.
It's perfectly acceptable.
I think we can be a business. Maybe. What do we have to do to be a target of IBM, of Microsoft, to put out businesses? For example, for example, there used to be this language called Java. Well, now we have C#. Mm-hmm. See, so all we have to do is pose a threat, and then maybe they will be.
Maybe you should try to use your culture and get bought and make it on them.
I'm sorry.
If you start acting these things in comments, I'm not seeing much that distinguishes this from a colon parenthesis prefix notation for C#.
It's not using all that much.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, yeah, why not? Whatever, I mean. Right, C# doesn't have a macro language, right? Which is, you know, so great to write compilers,
yeah.
Right? C# has a completely awful code dump. It's really hard to use, really stupid. Okay, so if you fix those two problems, you make my day, right? And if you would like to fix it in C#, why not? Yes.
What's the overhead per object in CLR? Minimum overhead per object?
The minimum overhead is 2D words on 32 machines.
How many?
2.
Yeah.
So that a console would be twice as big as it would be on any other list.
Yeah.
And your list code would end up being equivalently larger to load up and manipulate.
That's the data in the code.
The list application is a constant of data type is dwindling in importance over the last 20 years. That's even more important than the list where everything is constant, but a lot of more data a lot of more larger data is other types like loss instances, vector data, binaries.
Right. I agree with that. But if this is primarily as a compiler type language, then you're going to have a lot of code there. And you know, as S expressions, it's going to be a large number of constants in the system.
So,
it's going to be very inefficient memory wise.
No.
I don't usually worry about how long it takes to run.
You have a question?
If these other languages really are, which I don't believe, getting close to being the same as Common Lisp, so that we lose our advantage, and then we're going to cripple ourselves and give away some of the things that they're just doing, won't they actually be better than us?
I don't think there is a single language, as I said, that is as good, right? There are multiple languages. The point is that, unfortunately, if you can use multiple languages within one project, then things start looking gloom for a single language that is the best at it.
Why do we need dozens of languages that basically have 95% or more of the same functionality? Why isn't it just one utility, basically?
Who cares?
History.
Yeah.
You can't retrain programmers easily, especially if you've got binaries that have to run because you don't have the source code like Gabe was at the other day.
Java got adopted very rapidly.
But not, it's not.
Are you sure
Java
was adopted?
JavaScript is still, a lot. I mean, it's a big market, right? And PHP and Python and those are different, right? Why? Because people don't really want to type variables when they don't have to, and when they write, when you write something that needs to iterate, a few hundred times, and you don't really care. So there is, I think niche languages do make sense, right?
Well, everyone's going in different directions looking at the Common Lisp, and we're just sitting there waiting for it.
Yeah, but on the other hand,
you know, when common lisp meets the real world, then things get stuck to get ugly, and that's the problem, right?
Well, I use the FFI all the time. It's not a lot of fun, but it's only a couple of days' work.
Yeah, but then try to sell that to someone that I've never seen a lisp, right, before, and say, oh shit, what are you giving me?
We're proving FFI.
Right, but that's kind of the point, right? It's that, and I feel the same way because, you know, I'm sitting in CLR, I'm going into native, and when I go to the OS and, you know, we have our own, you know, foreign function interface, right? And then we are kind of feeling the same pain, and I can tell you it's not pretty, and it's not getting any better. I mean, the CLR number one, people vote, best feature, say integration with native, okay? The worst ever feature we have, if you are someone at Microsoft, it's the interop with native.
Right? If someone were to take this list or a different list, and was going to implement a language for either the JVM or the CLR, right. That's sort of a softball question.
Right.
Why should they target the CLR instead of the JVM? And actually, maybe make the list much more like Common Lisp. Like,
right.
If you implement something much more like Common Lisp, is there any advantage to using the CLR over the JVM?
I think the instruction set is slightly better for CLR because we have the escape hatch of unsafe. So you can compile C, for example, our C compiler can leave normal C totally unsafe as an option to translate everything down to IL, which is unsafe, but essentially...
Unsafe in what way?
Oh, it means you can crash anything you want.
Right. I usually find plenty of ways of doing that anyway, even in Java, but... so, I mean, like, what level of things can you do in unsafe
code? So, it's type unsafe. You can, you know, dereference a pointer, cast it to an int, modify the thing, you know.
But you can roll your own tagging if you wanted.
Well, for example, you know, the CLR doesn't implement multiple inheritance, right? Well, C does, or C++, right? And they do it by, you know, generating code and having objects that do nothing like a CLR object. They have their own bitable that they, and it's all possible within the regular instruction set. And they do that by, you know, referencing stuff, declaring blobs. You can have blobs that are okay to the type system, and only the compiler knows about it and stuff like that. So that's one. Second is in terms of market. The Java is almost non-existent on desktops. The CLR is taking off on desktops. On server, it's about the same market share, so there's no particular advantage, so it depends on, you know, who your favorite vendor is.
If you're going to do it, why not target both? I mean, if you're going to go to the trouble of figuring out the subset that works in a model of
Java. A large number of issues to solve, in my opinion, are the same.
Your idea is actually not so new, because there were many attempts on this. Suppose this a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, there was this Haskell-based language called Logium, and what they did, they had to adopt the type system of CLR, and they lost 90% of the language at that moment. So something similar happens here. You know, as soon as you adopt the CLR type system, you lose a lot of Lisp. And also, Microsoft research on that just issued this F-sharp language, which is actually all kind of and they made some extensions. So there are many attempts on this. Why do you think, and maybe the better question is it common larceny the closest to what you actually want?
Maybe. I mean, the only question there is kind of how transparent you are, and, you know, it's not that. Right.
Not very transparent at all. I think that is a weakness in common larceny. We made deliberate decision to maintain compatibility with larceny and petty larceny, partly to reduce our maintenance burden. So common larceny is not at all what he's talking about. I think what he's talking about is a very interesting thing to do. I don't in fact think it would be very hard. If it's that easy to do and it's that beneficial as Patrick thinks it is, then by golly, maybe I'll go do it, but it's certainly not common larceny. We haven't done it yet.
I've been doing Java research for more than 7 years. In the last few days of this conference, I've seen many more exciting applications of CommonLisp than I've seen in more than 7 years of Java research. How many really exciting applications exist for CLR in your AP?
ASP.NET framework was very successful from the start, in server product. But essentially, you can run code behind an object inside of a form, and you design that, and then it runs on the server, and it runs on a standard browser. So that was one of the and with the performance that was between 2 and 10 times better than the ASP.NET, the ASP pages that it replaced. To us, that was pretty exciting. It's not research type of thing, it's pretty good. Coming down the pipe, we have a huge graphics library called Avalon that's really exciting. Takes advantage of graphics GPUs to do alpha blending and all kind of shit that usually are not mainstream on for UI, more mainstream for games. Those are kind of interesting things to me. Internal research, I'm not too plugged into the research. I mean, I know we are doing a whole bunch of research on parallelism using various two or three dialects derived from C sharp to try to write the trend of multi-core architectures that are coming down in the next few years.
Well, I've got a few more of those little nits that we might lose, and I just want to roll them up as I think of them. Somebody this morning, in my opinion, Will, pointed out that he didn't think from the CLR runtime stack that there's a way to add a little module that can parse the stack and give you a debugger's view of it. How would we do catch and throw? It's the equivalent of those catch and throw in the init clauses. I mean, these things have got to be doable, but it sounds like there's some suspicion that in CLR we're allowed to fall back to the almost C level functionality.
Yeah, good. I mean, Grid has been using pros, and probably pros suck in terms of performance. Something that actually we might fix at some point. Well, you can generate that.
Crawling the stack and having it, being able to introspect and debugging and being able to resume, these are the things.
Yeah, we don't have any reason to.
And is that in the future, or is that forever frozen?
None of our stuff is frozen.
How about mine?
No. It's only a matter of kind of what's the application. And then it's something that from the start, for the okay, fine, for is not a mainstream stuff, but it's slow. And
you're saying they made it slow so those people don't use it?
Well, it's kind of a right. And it was cheaper to make it slow than make it fast. And then somebody uses it, say, don't use it, because it's slow. Okay. And then they say, well, nobody uses it, okay, right, for mainstream. And that's something that we can fix compatibly, and we may fix. Those are choices we make that are not permanent. But at some point, that's kind of the most expeditious choice to do.
It's not just
Rob. Yep, Borgo's had his hand up for like 5 minutes. Borgo.
You just mentioned that within Microsoft, there is this sort of debate about native versus CLR.
It's not a debate, it's the fact that we have to live with both, and we have a huge infrastructure that has been invested by various groups in knowing exactly what native code is all about. And now you come and you say, okay, well, you know, I'd like to service my code. And say, yeah, well, you know, to service the code, you put it in that toolchain and spits out automatically a compressed version of the bits that you need to send to everyone. You say, yeah, but that thing expects, you know, native libraries, not IA libraries, what you do.
Okay, so, yeah, right. The question is really, how successful in that has Microsoft been in that really making that end user switch from end user meaning application, right? Switch from native.
Right.
So, maybe here we are talking about something that, yes, it's the need. But
right, so you are thinking how significant is the .NET platform, right? And
I'm asking,
you're asking, right? And most of the new functionality on future version of the OS will be available on managed code and not on in particular, there is no GUI development done in unmanaged code anymore. It's all managed code. The database, new database technologies such as WinFS are purely managed code. They don't exist in any code. So Microsoft itself would ship more and more high-level, all of the high-level libraries written by the OS or Autobot will be done in managed code. You can still call them for manage if you want using the reverse interrupt, but hang on, so.
I think he's actually asking the question. I think he's asking, or maybe I'm wrong, how successful Microsoft is getting third parties to move their coding over.
So in terms of third parties, we got the ISVs are the people that are the least interesting in switching, like Photoshop and those guys, and Word. I mean, Office is an ISV as well. Those guys have a large body of unmanaged code, and for them, they need to have enough of a value proposition in order to switch. And again, what's the value proposition? The value proposition will be when we have enough libraries that they can use that are written in managed code, and that are much simpler to use for managed code. Most of the code we see are small apps, and so on.
On the managed code, you see?
Yeah.
Small apps.
Right. And small apps because usually they don't have history.
Yeah, I mean, anecdotally, my answer would be, I unfortunately live in a world without Lisp since I left the Bolix server 20 years ago. But everyone I know who's writing new applications using managed. Without exception, and the adoption by people who move to C sharp from other languages is almost 100% excitement.
If, let's say, collectively somehow this body says, well, that's an interesting thought, but it really doesn't fit what we want to do, we're not going to take it on, you know, individually, collectively, right. Whatever. Yeah. Would Microsoft do it? Would they do what you're talking about and come up with one?
A research group may do it. The problem is research group in our company, none of them are really big on Lisp, right? So we have Camel, we have, but we don't really have Lisp advocates in research.
Well, if you do have that product, it's got Lisp in English language query, is that an idiosyncratic Microsoft Lisp?
Yeah, today we don't have Lisp advocates.
Oh. That's not exactly the best in the success record in that.
Is that a comment to what John was saying? In 98, at the Lisp conference just up the road here, Dick Gabriel made the observation that languages can be viewed in, as their success as kind of as portals. So Fortran was like a portal to numerical computing, and C was a portal to portable computing. Lisp was a portal to artificial intelligence computing, and Java was viewed as a portal to the internet computing. So in terms of what you were asking, John, like how do you make a threat or an opportunity for Microsoft,
this is the kick light, I guess. That's, we all need to write applications like Paul Graham and become rich, and then it's a portal to becoming rich.
That would make it very
popular. How about I make a deal with
you?
What's the largest CLR hosted application listed as complex? Is a field for size or time for hours?
Let's see, for Vega. Yeah, for like Schlumberger, they are an oil company and they are pretty strong in visualization. So they bring measurements and they have to visualize the measurements and do computation on them to find out if there's oil well or not. And I think 2 years ago they rewrote the entire application suite in C#, and they are running on a, I think they are running on gigabyte machine workstations, and they read in the morning and they work all day, and probably they have in terms of line of code, I don't know, in terms of kind of volume of code, they have volume of data, it's around a gigabyte. I mean, that's kind of where they make their money. That's one example. We have banks, like Morgan Stanley, and the other guy with significant line of business apps that are just running C#. I don't know in terms of number of people. But I think it's kind of equivalent to what people develop before in other high level applications. I think there's a big jump or it's
From the Lisp perspective, I mean, a language like this has kind of a marketing problem because there are sort of two categories of things people use Lisp for. There's sort of small, convenient, rapid prototyping, and for that, you know, any of the half dozen or so little scheme Lisp implementations that run in Java or .NET are perfectly fine. I mean, this one is, because you're eliminating weak typing, it's supposed to be more performant. But if you really want to get, you have a high performance Lisp application, then you're much better off using something that compiles down the native code, like the existing common Lisp implementation. So this sort of falls like in the middle of what people want to
do. Yeah, in the middle where, in my opinion, you get excluded, because if an application is not AI enough from the start to justify a Lisp investment, then you don't get your foot in the door, and that's it. Well, there you would have a hope of getting your foot in the door for part of the project. And then, for example, I mean, from my experience, visiting Morgan Stanley and those guys, it's rarely the fact that they have only C#. They have a lot of Vim.NET and C#. And it's like, you know, depending on the skill set, depending on the history, most of the form design is done in Vim.NET because that's what people used to. We used Vim before. Most of the database connection and kind of junk is done in C#, because people usually used to do that in C++, because they were kind of the more sophisticated guys. The debate is not about languages anymore, it's about kind of the most convenient tool to do their job.
But then again, all the commercial lists now have cap and comp. So comp and access comp plan.
Right, but try to convince someone, go to Morgan Stanley and tell them, oh, use our Lisp system, you know, come is cool. And say, okay, where is the VS? You know, I thing is, you know, I have a bug and now I have an exception. Well, you know, VS comes up and I see that, you know, stack frame I can't decode and stuff, what do I do? You know? It goes beyond. I mean, you have to integrate it into into the larger kind of software community, if you wish. In my opinion, I mean, that's what I am suffering from right now, to a certain degree, you know, being integrated. Integrated in amongst, you know, purely native stuff, and we add our runtime, and it's not always very smooth, and you know, so I'm trying to make that problem.
About Groovy extension, Enon's, well, C Sharp programmers I know use exception handling now in place of the old result checking model of C++,
right.
And thank God. But that kind of having Groovy really expensive doesn't play well with that.
Well, it does in the sense that they are checking for errors, right? The question is how many errors per second do you get, right? If you do file probe, you know, probe file, whatever, you know, using using a cache and then that's a problem, right? But that's kind of the order, right?
So that didn't answer your question.
I remember one of the
SPDs. This is 1970s double thinking that it's only errors. Only errors raise exceptions. But we've got the 70s.
Right, right.
But the question is how many occur per second jump?
1,000 occur per second. It's not unreasonable to search trees that way. Don't waste all the time of your staff. We're going to have to move on to the next session.